Today, the inconvenient truth about property investing in Australia. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. Whilst property investing in Australia can deliver long-term gains, investing does carry real, measurable costs and risks. In addition, taxpayer-borne tax concessions are worth billions annually, rising potentially with interest rates and rising borrowing costs, and that's pushed hundreds of thousands into mortgage stress, and returns are uncertain, for example, when strata levies rise on units or sudden price corrections, they can erase expected returns. Now, last week, I ran a live show with Be Right agent founder Aaron Scott, and I included analysis on net investment yields across the country, which rattled a few cages, I must say, as I showed that according to my analysis, many property investors are going backwards in cash flow terms. As one comment after the show said, why is no one talking about this? So today, I want to unpack this a little more and talk about some of the inconvenient truths relating to property investment. The TLDR summary is this: despite the myth that property is a safe passive asset, reality is that ongoing active management, cash flow buffers for rates and levies and local market risks are, well, essential to assess. Not all investments work, and many are indeed underwater. And the other point here is that while many believe negative gearing is a smart strategy and represents a small giveaway from the government, in reality it costs taxpayers billions annually, and the benefits are concentrated among higher income owners. And as the RBA said in a report on financial resilience, higher official rates since 2022 have materially increased repayments for variable borrowers, and the RBA flagged rising arrears and a small growing share of borrowers under stress. And independent measures show perhaps over a million households are classified as at risk during peak stress periods. That exposure is magnified amongst investor cash flows because of the risks when rents or occupancy falls. On Australian housing has delivered long-term gains, but cycles include deep corrections. Academic and official series show periods of stagflation and falls, meaning capital growth is not guaranteed and timing matters. Investors relying solely on property always goes up, risk being wrong for long stretches. Now, property investment can work, but only with rigorous due diligence. If you stress test cash flow for higher rates, inspect strata and sinking fund records, and treat tax concessions as policy-dependent benefits rather than guaranteed returns, then you might be okay. But actually, there's a lot to do here. Let's start with the tax breaks, as these are, of course, deemed a key reason to invest in property rather than other assets. Although we should highlight that recently, gold, stock markets, and even term deposits are offering returns above property if you do the real math. The Parliamentary Budget Office, the PBO, analysis showed the combined revenue foregone from negative gearing and the capital gains tax discount on residential investment properties was about $10.9 billion in 2023-24, split roughly between negative gearing and the CGT discount. The PBO also projects those costs will rise if interest deductions and capital gains continue to grow. This reflects long-term policy from the government to get out of public housing and to outsource the provision of rental property to the private sector, initially via mum and dad investors, though some of those these days have portfolios of more than 30 properties, replete with tax breaks. And of course, more recently, there has been a growth in build-to-rent projects supported by large international investors who now benefit from even more additional generous tax breaks for their efforts. Although many are still building high-rise homes targeting more affluent renters, so are not directly addressing the real housing crisis that we face. Here, we should note that ordinary investors are borrowing faster than owner-occupiers at the moment, with the annual growth rate for investor lending, according to the RBA aggregates at the end of November, staying at 8.1%, compared with 5.9% for owner-occupiers. And the longer-term trends show big spikes in investor growth, which tends to increase demand and so prices for property. Actually, Cotality shows that the total value of investor lending rose 17.6% over the quarter and 17.7% over the year to $39.8 billion. That's the highest level since the 3 months to December 2016, when it hit 40.7%. And it's been led by growth in New South Wales and the ACT. So government policy is once again directly linked to price growth. And incidentally, the APRA speed limits with high LVR lending will be gently capped. So it won't have much of a dampening effect, and it has been described as a precautionary move by the regulator. And it's not really a hard stop, more like a 200-kilometre speed limit than a 50-kilometre speed limit. One of the biggest issues is how to measure returns on property investment. The industry prefers to focus on so-called gross yields based on the theoretical headline rent relative to current prices. Gross yields is easy to compute and produces higher, more attractive numbers for listings and for brochures. Agents and developers use it because it's comparable at a glance, but it is totally as misleading because relying on gross yield overstates cash returns and can mislead buyers who do not model real holding costs. And it also assumes 100% occupancy and at market rents. SQM has a good source of gross investment yield data. Here is an average snapshot across the country. In January 2026, they report that houses on average are at 3%, while three-bedroom houses are at 3.2%, while all units are combined at 4.3% compared with 4.5% for two-bedroom units. And Catality, in their latest chart pack, says that with the growth in values continuing to outpace the change in rents, national gross rental yields continued to compress in the December period, falling to 3.56%. That's the lowest gross yield since September 2022, when they were at 3.51%. Despite the diminished yield profile, investor activity has trended higher. With investors comprising 41% of mortgage activity in the December quarter, the combined regionals, by the way, was a yield of 4.2%. So while gross investment yield is great for marketing, they are frankly meaningless. It's about as useful as the quoted average gains in home prices, which are also problematic, as I discuss often. Now, net investment yields start with gross rental income and then subtract vacancy allowance, property management fees, council rates, building and landlord insurance, strata levies, if any, maintenance, and other holding costs. And then we divide all that by an all-in cost, purchase price plus stamp duty plus purchase price plus immediate repairs, and you analyze that all out. Net yield requires many assumptions, so vacancy rates, repairs, strata, levies, insurance spikes, all that, and it can differ by owner and are harder to standardize. Industry avoids this complexity in public marketing, no surprise there perhaps. Net yield is more decision relevant because it reflects actual cash flow and servicing capacity. Here I'm going to drop in an excerpt from my earlier show, which covers the net investment yield maps driven off our surveys. We held data at the postcode level for more than 2,000 postcodes across the country, and the results really are quite shocking. So actually a map of net investment yield. This is actually looking centered on 2,000 postcode in the center of Sydney, right? And so I basically do this calculation based on the surveys, and you can see here that the reds are under 1.6% and the blues are over 0.9% positive. And you can see in and around the center of Sydney, there's very little that's actually positive. Newtown 2042 is just positive. And there's a couple of others that are, you know, not far away. But overall, on a net rental basis, actually in and around Sydney, most property investors on a cash flow basis are actually underwater. Now, that's a story that is, I haven't heard anybody else tell it, but I think it's a really important one, right? And if you were to go to, let's go to Melbourne just to sort of make a comparison here. This is Melbourne 3000. We'll start on there. Similar story. Again, what we're finding is that there's a lot of negativity. And look at the deep reds. So in the outer suburban ring of Melbourne, there's a lot of negativity. Now, of course, there are extra taxes on investment properties in Melbourne, as Jason said earlier on. And there's an expectation of the government there if they're going to get a lot of income, or maybe they won't. There's a few that, you know, maybe are okay, but actually overall in the greater Melbourne area, it's a pretty sad and sorry sight as to what's going on. And that really is a bit of a concern. I don't think people understand this picture, and I think it's an important picture. Now, if we were to go to Brisbane, Brisbane's a little bit different, of course, because the story there is that prices were quite a lot lower, although they're rising fast now. And so we have more properties in the greater Brisbane area that are actually positive, light blue, or maybe even a few that are dark blue if we pull out far enough. But again, there are areas where, again, people are underwater. And in fact, as the capital costs of property rises, Queensland, it's going to be more and more likely that more property investors in the greater Queensland area and the greater Brisbane area in particular are going to be under the pump when it comes to cash flow appreciation. Oh, and if we just look at Perth, seeing as you're over that way, Aaron, we'll just look at Perth as well, just to show a little bit of a story here. Now, here in Perth, there are some positives. West Leederville, for example, 6007, not bad. But if you look, North Perth and other areas too, there are areas, again, where from a cash flow perspective, people are underwater. Now, you know, okay, you might make returns on capital appreciation, but this is a killer picture for many people, and it's one that I don't think people understand. So this is a classic example to me of the property investment story and people being underwater, and they don't even realize it. If you are considering investment property, here are 10 things to check off. First, we start with a cash flow stress test, which is absolutely mandatory. You should model rental income, expenses, and repayments under perhaps a 2 to 3 percentage point rate rise and over a 3 to 6 month period of vacancy. It needs to be positive, or at least, if not, have a clear plan to cover shortfalls. Think about the loan structure as well. Check whether the loan is variable, fixed interest only, and the cost to refinance or break fixed terms. Interest profile changes, of course, are primarily a risk to investors. And for apartments, it's important to get hold of the strata records and sinking fund agreements. You need to obtain the last 3 years of strata minutes, budgets, and sinking fund statements. It's important to look for unresolved defects, insurance disputes, or recent special levies. These can create sudden large cash calls. And in my survey, many people are being called out. Then there's the question of operational expenses. You need to itemize the rates, the insurance, property management fees, the maintenance, the strata levies, and expected capital works. Don't rely on headline rent yield alone. It is misleading. Then think about tax and depreciation. Confirm allowable deductions. And it's important to think about record keeping needs and how negative gearing will affect overall taxable position. Maybe need to consult a tax agent for property specific advice. Do not assume tax rules are permanent. They will change potentially. And then it's important to do local market due diligence, review recent comparable sales and vacancy rates and planning supply and new builds and local employment drivers. Capital growth is local, not national. And then there's the question of insurance and liability. It's important to make sure you've got the right landlord insurance, the building insurance for strata, and potential uninsured exposures like for defects. Insurance costs have risen and affect net returns. And in fact, they were one of the key drivers of inflation over the last few years. And then it's important to think about the exit strategy and liquidation. You need to plan for scenarios where you must sell in the downturn, estimate likely time to sell, and potential price falls. It's very important to avoid relying solely on refinancing. And then there's the management and compliance. It's important to confirm property management fees, tenancy laws, and your capacity to manage repairs or disputes. Active management is often required. How are you going to do that? And then you need to pull all of this together, document the different scenarios, save your models and assumptions and sources, and revisit them annually or when there are changes in policy or interest rates or other factors. This is not simple. This is not straightforward. And in my surveys, many property investors do almost none of this. And remember, there are risks in the system. There's a risk that interest rates can flip returns quickly if they rise. Mitigation is about having conservative stress tests and larger cash buffers. There's a risk that strata may impose special levies and insurance might go up. So it's very important to get full strata records and make sure they have a healthy sinking fund. And there's also a risk relating to policy changes on tax concessions. And it's very important, therefore, I think, to treat tax benefits as secondary to cash flow and capital assumptions. So, in summary, Property investment is a higher risk game than many believe. It's spruiked to high heaven, and much of the so-called data is frankly just slop. So the bottom line is this. Property investors, caveat emptor.
Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.